Listen to that. Listen to that. That is Chris Green playing on his latest CD, Boundary Issues. He's sitting here. Chris, thanks for coming in. He had to bring his whole family because it's Labor Day and everybody's off, but I really appreciate you coming in, and I really appreciate you sending me that CD. The minute I listened to it, I was totally taken with it, and I said to myself, who the hell is this guy? Who are you?
Who am I? I'm Chris Green, saxophonist. Work mainly in Chicago. Live in Evanston. Been playing pretty professionally for the past, 25 years.
You born and raised around here?
Born and raised in Evanston, yes.
How did you come to music?
You know, it's one of those funny things. Like, you hear about other families, like, you know, father or mother plays instruments or sings or whatever. Nobody in my family really played an instrument, but they had really good musical ears, and both were kind of pretty avid record collectors. My mother was really big into like Motown. My dad was really into like disco and funk and that kind of
thing. Disco and funk, yeah. Holy cow.
So, you know, just I heard all that stuff growing up, and then when 9, 10, you get to be 10 years old, and the guy from the music store comes to the elementary school with all the instruments and lets you try them. You know, I tried the saxophone, and it looked really cool. I wish there was some magical thing where somebody in my family bestowed the jazz gene on me or
but
something.
But it was a more visceral thing. You saw a sax and heard it. You couldn't made much of a noise with it at 10 years old.
Well, my mother, who's my biggest fan, is always fond of reminding me, like, it's amazing how far you come, because I remember when we would make you practice in the backyard, because it was just...
Where'd you grow up?
Evanston, Illinois.
Oh, you grew up in Evanston, mm-hmm. too. And you're born and raised in Evanston.
Born and raised
Evanston
in Evanston.
Kid. When did you start to study music?
You study, or at least, you know, you take your lessons and play in the bands and all that stuff. And it's funny because I, when you play saxophone, you're kind of drafted to be in any kind of jazz band or whatever.
Sure.
And so I always got to play in the jazz bands, and it was one of those things that I thought I was okay at it, but I guess my band directors must have seen something, because they kept giving me more solos to, you know, like more chances to play. And I probably had more. I mean, I definitely had more nerve than actual skill.
Yeah.
But I think my nerve got me over. I'd say like my junior year of high school, I took a theory class, a music theory class. So I got to learn like the quote unquote science behind, music. So it was more than just like notes on a page. You're actually like, our teacher would actually have us analyze, classical pieces and stuff and, you know, break things down. And this is, you know, how the science of music works and the circle of fifths and all that kind of musical jargon. You know, and so now it's like, okay, I know I'm starting to know how it all works and how it all fits together, and I can sort of kind of tell what a key a song is in or the progression of a blues song. And
did you go to ETHS?
Yeah, went to ETHS.
Township High School. So. When did you decide, and man, that's a big decision to make, that my life is going to be music, to devote your life to music? In one sense, it can be a calling, and you're irresistibly called to it. But then there are also practical matters involved, like, well, yes, I'm drawn to music, but how will I make a living?
Exactly.
Kind of. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. You know, once, well, like I said, I took that theory class, and so I kind of got into, like, the science, the nuts and bolts and science of it all. And like I said, and right about that time, I my band director was always kind of giving me, like, you know, I guess he sensed the talent, so he's always kind of giving me like records to listen to, and I'd always kind of like, whatever. That stuff's old. That's old. Duke Ellington, that's old man's music. Nobody wants to hear that stuff. And then, like, all right.
That must have pleased your band director.
He was like, all right, I'm going to get him. He's like, I'm going to keep working on him. And then he finally, all right, John Coltrane's My Favorite Things. Here you go. And it was just like, okay. This made sense, because at the time, like, my main listening was like, you know, the hip hop and kind of R&B of the day.
Yeah.
So this was something that kind of hit me. I could kind of sort of relate to it. I mean, it had this real dominant bass line. It was a pretty steady ostinato bass line that was pretty much didn't change throughout the song, which is kind of like some of the stuff I was listening, I was kind of drawn to. But then there was this crazy stuff on top. And so, you know, with the soprano saxophone and all this crazy stuff that McCoy Tyner was doing on piano. And I didn't necessarily say I can do exactly that, but it's like, okay, I can try to do something like that. And I was like, okay, sort of what I kind of want to do, and so I've kind of been chasing that one of those things.
You wound up at Indiana University, right?
Indiana University, studied with David Baker, who's kind of the guru.
What did your parents say when they said, "I'm going to go to college and study music"?
Well, I lucked out.
Or did you lie to them and say, "I'm going to go study pre-law"?
Here's where I lucked out. Both my parents were actually alums of Indiana University.
Oh, okay.
So all this time, like, they'd been, you know, they were trying to subliminally get me to, you know,
go to our school.
IU t-shirts, IU coffee mugs, all that stuff. And then, as it turns out, I'm like, you know, I start looking at the schools I want to go to and the schools that have great music schools. And you get this list of, you know, jazz schools that have great jazz programs. Turns out that their alma mater is one of the finest jazz schools at that time, started by this guy named David Baker, who kind of revolutionized jazz education. So it's just like, okay, this is, you were talking about callings and things earlier. Well, there's a clear sign that this is where
fate.
I need to go.
There's where fate plays a hand in that thing. That experience, that college experience, really formed you then.
In a lot of ways. Certainly, at the time, I had a fair amount of natural talent, but because I'm in a collegiate environment, and I kind of discovered what I wanted to do relatively late, and so you had kids that had been in, like, jazz camps and stuff for years and years and years. Yeah. And so finally, I kind of had to play catch-up because these people were taking apart
jazz. More technically proficient.
More technically proficient, more informed of a musician than I was. I mean, they certainly knew, like, you know, the difference between Charlie Parker and a host of other saxophone players, whereas I couldn't tell you the difference.
Interesting.
So there's that, and they taught me like how to really sit down and practice, and how to really like practice effectively and break things down musically, and it really set me on the path where I'm at now.
So you get out of school, and what do you start to do?
Get out of school and start writing music, living at my mom's place, but I start writing music. But I'm also, I start to form a band of my own, a little more on the funky, I mean, jazz, but more on the electric bass, late Miles Davis kind of vibe. But I'm also trying to, like, you know, sit in wherever I can. And so I'm you know, playing some gigs with various people.
When I covered music a lot, I always found, especially the jazz scene here, could be very nurturing, that you would be able to sit in with people who 20, 30 years old than you and more vastly talented, but also willing to share and nurture. Was that your experience, too?
Yes, because, you know, they were just as much students, they were up-and-comers just like I was.
But sometimes some people like that forget they were ever up-and-comers.
This is true. But I would say for the most part, the older musicians that kind of pulled me along and would hire me or throw me opportunities or the other saxophonists who would let me sub for them, They were certainly, you know, not only were they helpful in my career, but they could also pull me aside and tell me what I, you know, you need to work on. Like, you know,
that's fantastic.
You could work on, you know, you need to work on your tone, or you need to work on your time. Your time was a little sloppy when I heard you play. Your ideas were cool, but your time was a little
kind
weird.
Kind of like an informal but necessary graduate school.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
That's a little sample of my new friend Chris Green, his quartet, playing on the latest CD, Boundary Issues. This is your how many CDs?
Oh, boy. Hold on one second.
Give me a rough guess.
Rough guess. So that would be my ninth CD, but our sixth with the quartet.
Wow. It's a tough business, the music business these days, and making CDs is... someone I know just bought a new car, and there's no CD player. And I'm like, what is that about?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I do this every time. I used to do this all the time. I would threaten not to. I mean, when I would make an album, I would threaten, like, I'm just going to press it up in vinyl, or I'm just going to do digital, or something like that. And then my wife would be like, you idiot. It's bad enough with 1,000 CDs sitting in our basement. You think I want 500 vinyl records sitting in our basement? Like, no, you're right.
She sounds like a very smart person.
So, and CDs are still good. I mean, I think for that live performance thing, you know, know, people really like what you do and they reach, you know, something.
I agree.
It's that initial, like, I want to take a piece home with you, you know, and they'll go home and they'll rip it on their computer, which is fine. But, you know, they still want that thing that put it in your hand.
I could not agree with you more. What it seems as if you are open to, Chris Green, influences from a variety of different sources, that you're not, you haven't pigeonholed anything, that you're very eclectic in your tastes and in the allowing various performers to influence you. Am I reading that correctly?
No. I mean, you know, before I'm a jazz musician.
Yeah,
obviously,
right.
But you know, I didn't come up in the 40s or, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, my frame of reference is going to be, you know, it's up to me if I want to be any good to go back and listen to the Lester Youngs,
sure,
and Charlie Parkers and Coltranes. But if I'm going to be as honest and truthful as I can, you know, I'm a kid that sat and watched, you know, MTV videos, you know, for hours on end, waiting for the next Princeton, you know, Prince or Michael Jackson video. So I listened to that stuff. And, you know, before I really dedicated myself to studying jazz, you know, when I was playing for fun, I was playing with rock bands in school and sitting with klezmer bands. And, you know, even today, even just last night, I played with a really great funk band on the west side called the Midnight Sun. You know, and again, but at the end of the day, I want to surround myself and collaborate with good musicians, you know, regardless of the genre.
Who's in your quartet? Give them a shout out.
It is Damian Espinosa on piano, and Mark Piani on bass, and the new guy who's been with us 6 years.
New guy.
He's the new guy, Steve Corley on drums.
And you're playing. You have a performance coming up at Winters.
Yes,
just east of here.
The big one. We're playing at Winters on Saturday the 30th. For my money, probably the nicest club in town. Really great room, great sight lines, great staff.
Certainly the newest room in town. That's for sure.
The newest, but they spent some money.
And
what I like about it is, like, the layout is really nice, so wherever you sit is a good seat, and the it sounds really good in there. Like, I don't have to play through a microphone there when I play saxophone.
Oh,
I don't have to play a mic. It's that intimate for the crowd. I dig that.
Interesting. Do you have a website,
Chris? I do. Chris Green Jazz.
Chris Green with an E at the
Green
end.
With an E,
greenjazz.com.
That's it.
Go there, but I'm going to let you people listen. I don't care if you're in a car. I don't care if you're coming back from New Buffalo right now. I don't care if you're going to Brookfield Zoo. Here's 3 minutes or so of Chris Green. What we already told Brett what you wanted to play. What is it?
So this
set
is
it up for us.
Blues for Dr. Fear, which is dedicated to my son that you just met. A couple years ago when I wrote the song, he kind of adopted his own little alter ego.
Which was called Dr. Fear?
His own little evil alter ego. So when he was jumping on the couch or tearing stuff up or whatever, I would get home from a gig and I'm like, baby, what happened? She'd be like, Dr. Fear's here.
I'm Dr. Like, Fear came for a visit. Oh, Dr. Fear. So you dedicated a song to him.
Dedicated the song. And it features.
He's sitting out there now. And have a listen, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Fear. Chris Green. That's a lovely, lovely, lovely piece. You were telling me while we were listening to it that you write many of the pieces, and it's a really, it's a collaborative thing with your quartet, right?
Very much so. I mean, at the end of the day, the band's named after me, but I'm on stage with three other guys. And
you've been together for a while. You go, the new guy came in yeah, 6 years ago.
The new guy's been with us 6 years, but yeah, we've been going as a band since 2005. So I've managed to keep the same personnel. But what I like about the guys is they're all really, really creative, and you know, like I don't necessarily lean on them for ideas, but they're such creative guys, and they hear what they tend to know what a song may need, you know. And at the end of the day, I get the final say on it. But you know, Damien, our piano player, may suggest a chord, or Steve, our drummer, I may say, like, you know, here's what I'd like to hear, and he takes that to the next degree. Or a bass player who's really good at coming up with endings. I mean, if I could end every song that I wrote with like shave and a haircut,
yeah,
I would end it like that. But he's always the one like, no, you ended the song like that the last time. How about this? You know, and it always fits. So that's what I like.
Well, Chris, I'm so glad you sent me this CD. Otherwise, I never would have found it. You can find more about Chris at Chris Green, G-R-E-E-N-E, jazz.com. He's also on Facebook. He's on Twitter. And he'll be at Winters on September 30th. And I will give you more information about that this Sunday when I will be playing more of your music
Thank you very much. Regular
Sunday night show. What's Dr. Fear's real name?
Dr. Fear's real name is Alexander Green. And, he just started kindergarten. So,
well, there aren't many kids just starting kindergarten who've got a song dedicated to them.
Exactly.
I love that song. Chris, it's a pleasure to meet you and your family, your wife and Doc. I'm always going to call him Dr. For Alex, that's going to be your name forever.
That's fine.